Welcome to the Money Lab Live Podcast, episode number 87, the Where's the Child Support Check Money Story. Welcome back to another live broadcast of the Money Lab Podcast. I am your host, Wei Hong from the Six Figure Academy. Now, this is the podcast where we give you tips, strategies, and interviews with other entrepreneurs on how to create that ultimate entrepreneurial lifestyle, free of bad money stories, money anxiety, and stress so that you can monetize your dreams and execute your genius. Now, if you haven't already downloaded our free ebook, From Money Anxiety to Six Figure Mastery, make sure you go to go.thesixfigureacademy. That's the number 6figureacademy.com. Go.thesixfigureacademy.com and get it there. It's the perfect complement to all the things we discuss on the show. And quite frankly, it could change your life. Now, if you are joining us live today and you are not on YouTube Live, you're going to miss this lovely mug that's on our guest's face right now. And that's a big loss for you. But in case you're not on YouTube Live, make sure you get on Spreaker.com and download the Spreaker app on your mobile device and search for the hashtag or pound, or as they say in Japan, sharp, hashtag the Money Lab, so that you can join us in the chat room, ask questions, and interact with us and our guest, Terry Bean. Now, while you're there, subscribe so that you don't miss an episode and you can catch us every single week. For all other ways to find us, go to thesixfigureacademy.com/radio for all the details. Now, if there's something that you love about what you hear on this episode today, and after having a brief conversation with Terry right before we got on the show, I know you absolutely will, and then you know that this content could help someone you care about. Remember, sharing is caring. Share this show to that person. Now, I'm really excited about our show today because not only was he able to come in last minute because we had our scheduled guest had a family emergency and had to take care of that, he jumped in, saved the day, because what we're going to do is he basically works in the same area that one of my company works in, except even deeper and probably even better. This is someone that specializes in content creation and marketing. And in this day and age, if you're an entrepreneur that's not embracing that piece, then you're missing out. You're actually totally missing the boat and you're probably falling in the water. So a few things to help you out on the show to make sure that you want to listen in and key in on, especially if you're taking notes. The first thing I want you to listen for is basically the importance of not having money anxiety or a bad money story when you're putting together a marketing strategy. It'd be really funny to hear what Terry has to say about that. And also how this bad money story that we're talking about, that where is the child support check, can impact your life beyond your business or career or even population growth. What's that all about? And then that's the last thing I want you to listen for, how branded content and influencer networks translates to money flow for you and your business. Because a lot of us have heard that before, but how does that really turn into ROI? How does that then impact your bottom line? Okay, so want to make sure you listen for those things, because our guest today is an author, speaker, relationship marketing expert. He serves as the chief networking officer and publisher at One E.
I get that all the time.
I know.
That's what we wear to work. That's right. Not what we do.
Okay,
right?
So you guys wear onesies to the One E company.
Yeah, it's like wear those things. The little jumpers that guys.
Oh yeah,
wearing.
The jumpers that they have with the whole different like characters and stuff like that. So O N E dot I N I.
Or animals. So man, it's fun, dude. It is. So sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No worries. And you're also the founder of Motor City Connect, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
yeah,
awesome. So that's pretty much it. So welcome to the show, Terry Bean. Yay.
Thank you for having me, Wade.
Oh, I didn't give you the proper applause. Hey, everybody, we need to give him a standing ovation because he came in last minute. Made sure it worked for everybody. Okay.
That's awesome that you have that queued up, ready to go. Good move. I'm learning how to run a podcast as we're doing this. I've done more than you, but I'm learning from you. This is excellent.
So awesome. I mean, I you and I were talking right before the show just to kind of get, you know, prepped up for it, and literally almost lost track of time, and, you know, I had YouTube screaming at me, hey, you guys are going live in a minute. I was like, whoa, we got to stop this conversation. So I'm really excited about what we're going to bring to the table today in terms of talking about, you know, what this is all about. But let's get the formalities out of the way, because this show, The Money Lab, is all about bad money stories and how that impacts people's lives. And, you know, when you shared your money story, and I'm so glad that you were able to kind of answer that question properly, you'd be surprised how many people are afraid to share their money story. But you grew up hearing that word over and over again, didn't you? Where's the child support money? Where's the child support check? And in this day and age where you've got like one out of two families getting a divorce, you know, that's probably a pretty common story that comes up with a lot of people, right?
It you know, I'll tell you what. I got to see my father every other week, mm-hmm. and every other weekend. My parents got divorced when I was four and a half. Okay. And they lived maybe 15 miles apart, so saw him frequently. And listen, before we go any further, great flipping guy. Love this dude. Learned mm-hmm. a ton from him. Successful entrepreneur his own right. Starting out at the time we're talking about, so young in business, and it grew up to do really well, and never missed a payment, so not deadbeat, nothing like that.
Right.
He's passed away too, so now I feel like I'm telling stories out of school. Right. But yeah, man, mom. Talking about on Friday before, make sure you ask your dad where the check is. Make sure you ask your dad where the check is.
She put it on you to do it.
Yeah, and it's not like their relationship was so broken that they couldn't talk, but maybe it was, right? Uh-huh. Again, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
Right.
What do I know, right? Right. I just thought that they could be in the same room at a birthday party and not kill each other, so that was a win, right?
Right.
We're talking about late 70s, so, you know, I was one of the first kids I knew whose parents were divorced, right?
Yeah, it wasn't so prevalent back then.
Yeah. It wasn't unheard of, right. But it certainly wasn't, like you said, 51% of marriages today.
I know.
So, but it was a weird conversation to, and hey, mom said, I got to make sure to ask you, where's the check?
Right.
And I remember the $177, right? And now whether that was every 2 weeks or once a month, I don't recall, but I remember that number getting there.
Wow.
Like I had the check, right? Like, and I'm like, well, this is child support. I'm the child. Let's go shopping, baby.
Exactly. Right.
I'd have blown that shit like on Star Wars figures or something. Who knows?
Right, because our money stories when we were kids were unfettered and it's like all about what we want, and that, you know, giving us there was no permission needed. This is what I want. This is what I'm gonna get.
But no permission, man.
Yeah, but that's so fascinating. So, like at the very young age, you were already having to take on that, not just the language around asking for a check that was quote unquote owed to your mom, but it was the energy behind it, the emotions behind it, the fact that she kind of like had you shoulder that just even as a messenger to your dad. How did that impact you? You think as you grew up having that experience around, you know, the energy and the emotions around just asking for where's the rent check? Oh, where's the rent?
Yeah, well, in some cases it probably was. Let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
In some cases it was the check for jelly, and other times it might have been the shoes check, and certainly it was the mortgage payment.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting question, and in honestly, way until filling out the speaker bio and the information that you requested for the show, I haven't spent a lot of time on it. So, you know, I'm gonna probably go kind of deep with this right now.
Yeah, good. I love it.
And so you're going to play therapist for the next couple of minutes. So it my initial answer to your question, how does it work and how does it make me feel? You know, when I'm operating at my highest level, it makes it really easy to ask for money. But that highest level, as we know, is generally outside of our comfort zone.
Right.
So in our comfort zone, it always makes for a really awkward conversation, right?
Mm.
Like I get some anxiety still. I'll be 48 this month.
Okay.
I still get some anxiety.
Happy early birthday.
Around Well, yeah, thank you. Around asking people for money, right? It's still difficult. And that's true if it's clients or if it's prospects or even people that I'm doing some work with, right? Wow. It's a very interesting conversation for me, to be sure.
Yeah. So because as a kid, I mean, that was probably the first behavior pattern associated with the initial ask. You go into your dad, like, why am I asking dad this? But I don't even know how to ask it. Do I just ask it? And then how did your dad respond every time? Was it different every time? Every time you asked it? Sometimes it was fine or sometimes it was charged. I mean, how was it?
So what I remember it being not necessarily none of your business, but I remember it being, this isn't really any of your business, right? You shouldn't be the one asking. Right. So it was I'm mildly uncomfortable to ask, and it was mildly uncomfortable to receive the answer.
Right.
So it was, you know, and it's so funny that we're having this conversation because I have said for a long time, I have self-esteem through the roof, man. I have no issues there.
Yeah.
But I have low self-worth. And so sometimes I have a hard time even figuring out how to bill for things, right?
Right.
Like, I don't know. I'll throw somebody an invoice and I'll be like, oh, yeah, well, if we do 10 hours of time, that'll be, you know, $700. But if you want to do an hour of my time, it's going to be $250. And it's just like, if you do the math there, dude, it doesn't even make sense. It's like, wait, what?
I'll do 10 hours.
Yeah, I'll take the 10 hours, please. Can I spread those out over 3 years? Yeah, sure, go ahead.
It's like a 90% discount.
It's the dumbest shit, man. And I wonder how tied in to this conversation is that result, right? So as we're talking through this, I'm thinking through the same thing because I've long gone, I don't know where the self-worth thing is, right? I don't understand why that's so broken in me.
Right.
Because if you look at my resume or if you look at some of the CV, as they call it, right,
and
the highlights of my career, dude, the highlights are pretty cool, right? I've done some good
impressive
shit. So, but it's weird. Like, I'm like, well, somebody else was responsible for that. No, no one was. You were. But I don't ever want to, you know, I don't ever get too tied to some of that stuff, I guess.
Right. No, I think you're absolutely right. There's an absolute correlation there because as you're talking, I had like, you know, goosebumps coming. I was like, oh my God, that is so it right there. I mean, this could be one of the most transformational interviews you've ever had, and you were the one being interviewed.
Right?
Because think about it, though. I mean, because when your dad said it's none of your business, imagine if you carried that with you, and if you still carry that with you, that when you bill somebody, there's a part of you that's hearing a voice, it's none of your business. You shouldn't be asking for money. This is not your job to ask for money. But what if it...
Yeah, and it is. It's been pervasive, right? I mean, I've been an entrepreneur and, you know, either on my own or working with a team of people on our own for the better part of, you know, 20 some years. I started in my late 20s that opened my first company.
Yeah.
So I've been the one responsible to keep the lights on. It's dark in here. That's just a coincidence, trust me. but it's been that on me for a really long time. So, you know, I joke or you know, it's funny. Sometimes I think they're jokes, but if they're not funny, are they still jokes? But I used to quip and say I always had a hard time sending invoices, and I always had a hard time sending proposals.
Right.
So, and if you think about as an entrepreneur, what are the two most important activities?
You can't
afford not to. What's it?
That's the bloodline. That's your bloodline.
Those would take days. All the other stuff I could do in a heartbeat. And it was probably 3 or 4 years ago that I was like, this has to change now. Right?
Yeah.
Because to your point, that's the bloodline. You don't send those things out, you don't get new business. You don't send the invoice out, you don't get paid.
Right. And if your clients aren't paying and they're getting stuff for free, they don't appreciate the value of the results that are actually coming as a result of what they're paying for. You know, and this goes around to people's like, well, if you're doing good stuff, if I could do it for free, I would do it. Yeah, but your clients would get less results.
That's right.
Because there's no skin in the game. They're not
Absolutely. they won't be as tied to the result as you are, right? Mm-hmm. And that never works. And to some extent, it eventually you end up looking at it and going, well, I'm not even getting paid for this. So why am I going to put all my effort into this when I could be putting my effort into X, Y, or Z where there is money?
Right. So I can only imagine where your business would go now if that money story was released, if you were no longer tied to that. Because the reason why, you know, especially at the age group, that from 0 to 7, when I work with my clients and students, I said, go to when you were 0 and 7 and what you understood about money back then. That's the core. That's the root of all the your behavioral patterns around money. And in a household where, you know, mom and dad are no longer together, that becomes an even more hypersensitive component, because when you're home with mom, all her money stories or money anxieties will be kind of like, there's nowhere else to go but to you.
That's right. Suck them right in too, like a vacuum cleaner, right? It never changed that bag.
Yeah. And then you go to your dad's, and then her money anxiety like triggers his money anxiety, and then you get the whole book.
that's exactly right. It's like, man, I'm starting to feel lighter already, dude. This is good.
And you know, and that's the first thing. The three tenets of change are what? Basically, awareness is one thing, and then
for
acknowledgement,
sure,
that it's not really yours, right? And this is why. And then you kind of love on yourself, saying, "Hey, I took it on because I love my mom, I love my dad, and they were my idols when I was growing up because I had nobody else to look up to. Why don't I take on what their belief systems are?" And then that's when we can actually shift. And that's why that lightness comes in. It's like, oh, I can actually draw my own canvas right now.
That's such a great point, right? Because it is. They are heroes,
yeah,
right? They are the people you look up to.
Yeah.
And frankly, regardless of how you grew up, you don't know any different. You don't know any better. Right. You don't know from what's poor and what's wealthy. Even the guy that had the, you know, the kid that lived in the other side of the neighborhood, right? In the nice part of the neighborhood,
right,
with the video games. He had Pac-Man and he had the cool stand-up games, right? But that doesn't mean he had that much more or that different, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, I didn't grow up in an area where there were a lot of mansions, right? Those were 30, 40 miles down the road. So we didn't see that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting though, you know, I bet you're not the only one who grew up with a similar type of money story. And despite that, okay, you were able to achieve certain levels of success. I mean, by what I saw, you know, doing a little bit of background because of, you know, what I have to do in order to talk intelligently to you on the show, you're really well accomplished. So how do you explain the difference then with someone who used that money story as a reason not to achieve what you've been able to achieve in your career path versus what you're able to do?
You know what, people ask all the time, right? How you doing? And I always have some variation of excellent, fantastic, fabulous, whatever the case may be. But I always finish that thought with, but I have an unfair advantage. I have a wonderful mindset, right? So I learned early on that everything that matters is between the headphones,
right?
And it's because we're wearing headphones. Normally it'd be between the ears, but right now it's between the headphones. And so because of that, there's a level of strength, there's a level of persistence, there's a level of determination, there's a level of desire, and ultimately, I know that I will always meet people that are more successful financially than I am, because my motivator and my drive isn't necessarily tied to money.
Right.
My motivator and my drive is tied to A, being happy and enjoying this life, because it's a very short one, and B, being of service and helping other people. So when you're talking about how you run this show, it so resonates with me, because that's how I live with everybody. That's why Motor City Connect exists, right? That's just part of who I am.
Yeah, and what is Motor City Connect, just so that we can give some perspective?
So Motor City Connect, something that started, in fact, LinkedIn is blowing up right now because it's my 12-year anniversary of Motor City Connect.
Oh, wow.
It started as a hybrid online real world networking group. So it was one of the first geolocal groups that really got people to connect together mm-hmm. in the community, around their community, but be able to do that both electronically and in the real world, because it was all business, right?
Right,
so
right.
It was strictly that. So that was kind of the idea was, especially in 06, Detroit was dying on the vine, man.
Yeah.
And if I realized if we don't do something to empower the entrepreneurs and the soon-to-be entrepreneurs, because people are getting laid off left and right,
right.
If we didn't show them how to grow a business,
right?
So we had to grow the individual so they could grow their business, so ultimately we could work together and build our community back.
Yeah.
And fast forward to 2018, even in Hollywood, you're probably hearing good news about us at this point, right?
Yeah.
And everything's Hollywood to me in California. If it's not Silicon Valley, it's all Hollywood. Or just
sort
north of Mexico.
No,
so it's you and I were talking about Hollywood before, which is why it's stuck in my head. Rotondo Beach, right? Is that where
Rotondo Beach, right, exactly.
Okay.
Well, you know what? The area that I live in is called Hollywood Riviera. So in a sense, you are
okay. So we got it nailed. But yeah, I mean, so hopefully the good news about the rebirth and the renaissance of the city of Detroit has even made it that far west.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and you're also talking to somebody who is so, like, you know, kind of like geeks out on, you know, economic trends and everything, because I look at it from a human behavioral standpoint, because we work around the areas of money, anxiety and stress and worry and how that drives people, you know. And that's why I'm so fascinated about how you're able to do that. And, you know, consistently across the board, it's a lot of people say that, you know, it's the mindset, right? And why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think it's the mindset piece that is such a critical component? Because there's so many parts of our being. There's our energy levels, there are emotional levels, there are mindset, and then there's the body. Why is mindset such a big factor in whether or not someone is able to capitalize, so to speak, on their humble beginnings or what they learned from their childhood?
I think to some extent, mindset encapsulates a lot of what you just talked about, right? Mm-hmm. And whether it's your being, it's the part of who you are, it's the energy that you bring into the room, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think it's a kind of an all-encompassing piece. And I think the reality is that your body, like our physical nature, can endure anything that our mind says it can. I'll give you a great example. I haven't been in the gym for a while. I live on a lake, so all summer long I've been paddleboarding and calling that exercise.
Beautiful.
Which I'll take it, right? No complaints. Love it. Love it. Love it.
I need to go
love
visit
it.
You. Oh, I live on the ocean, but you live on a lake, and you know I do miss, you know, being able, because we used to do that when we were younger as kids. Our parents would take us out to this massive reservoir and we would go out on the boats and play.
So fun, man.
Yeah.
We'll do a home and home podcast. I'll come visit you on the ocean. You can come visit me on
Perfect.
The lake. I'm all in. That
I
sounds
love it.
Great to me. But because of the paddleboarding, right, we all know there's only so much time in the day. As much as I like to pretend I have infinite amount of time, really, I don't.
Yeah.
So
most of us don't.
It's not. This is not just a Terry problem. Turns out it is pervasive. Terry's kind of self-centered, but very others focused. So it's okay. It evens itself
this
out.
This problem is all mine. Oh my!
I am the only one with this. So I haven't been in the gym for a while, and I went yesterday for the first time in probably 3 months.
Okay.
And I made the decision at one point last week that next time I go to the gym, I'm going to run a mile, even though I haven't even thought about running anywhere for like 3 years. Right? There's no running's not in my vocabulary.
No, I'm not a big fan of running either, even though I did track.
Yeah.
I still don't like running.
You did what? I'm sorry?
I did track, and I still don't like running.
Yeah. I'm like, man, you better be chasing me if I got to run somewhere.
That's the Detroit in you.
Yeah, that's it. You better have something really good or be behind me. So I started, and I got about 3.5 minutes in, and it was just to run a mile. That was the goal. And I'm like, can't do it. And I stopped, and I walked for 12 seconds. And as I was walking, I started calling myself a bunch of names that I won't repeat on the show, and said, get over yourself and start running.
We're so mean to ourselves, aren't we?
We're so mean. And the self-talk is such an important thing to fix, right? You talk about awareness and acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Be aware of your self-talk and acknowledge when it's messed up and then fix it. That'll change a lot in your life.
Oh, my God, so much.
But I got to over the mile. And I stopped and I got off and I vowed to not ever have to do that again. So we'll see what happens in a couple of years.
I'm bucket sure list I'm a, done.
I'm a sucker for stuff like that. We went to Cracker Barrel the other day for breakfast, and it was kind of the same. It was the same conversation. While you're waiting for an hour and a half to finally get your food, and then you eat and you're like, boy, the options are really good, but the quality of the food isn't. Let's not come back here again.
And wait an hour and a half of our life.
Yeah, so 4 years from now, we'll totally forget the experience. We'll be like, oh my God, we have to go to Cracker Barrel.
And do it again. It's like, why did we keep doing this to ourselves?
Exactly. We'll have like a mental flashback, right? It'll be like, remember that time we were talking about the same problem?
It's like the Cracker Barrel PTSD.
That's exactly right. It's got to be a thing. And if it's not, we're going to make it a thing. Hashtag Cracker Barrel, hashtag PTSD. Go ahead.
And as a side note, PTSD is no joke.
Yeah, right. And Cracker Barrel kind of is. We're clear.
Yeah.
Cracker Barrel doesn't sponsor the show, do they? I just want to make sure because that would be bad.
Exactly. Although they probably should be at this point. So maybe we'll reach out to them after the fact. We could slip you guys in, just kind of break it open a little bit and throw a logo up.
All press is good press. It doesn't matter what they were actually saying.
Right. And that's kind of your gig, right? And, you know, we were talking about earlier before the show, kind of how important it is to, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, why do I have to deal with bad money stories? Why do I have to deal with a story like, for example, what you grew up with? Because I don't see how that has anything to do with my life, my career, whatever the case may be. And you work in the world of where you're helping people grow their business from a marketing strategy, content creation standpoint. Have you ever, while working with a client, encountered somebody who at the 11th hour or at a very critical decision-making point had a bad money story, money anxiety, rear its ugly head that literally impacted the decision they made moving forward?
Oh, man, it happens. It happens all the time, right? Yeah. And I wasn't even sure where you're going with the question, but people pull out of deals. Uh-huh. Right? People will not do things that they said 2 hours before or 2 weeks before that they were going to do.
Right.
And it is so, you know, we into the Detroit area, the market can be fairly volatile because we're so tied to the automotive industry.
Right.
So it's, you know, in the last couple of weeks, both Ford and GM have announced either that they're going to be buying back 50 plus thousand employees, right, doing a buyout. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to be laying off people. And in some extent, you know, both are going to happen.
Wow.
Right? So
in one company.
In each, right?
Right.
And so I know from paying attention that this is going to have a cascading effect because suppliers, right? And then all the companies that supply the suppliers. Mm-hmm. We're a couple of years out on the outside. And we're a few months out on the inside from this domino effect that's going to happen.
Right.
In 2008, it was March of 2008, I was sitting on a panel at a tech hub, and we were talking social media and marketing in general. And I remember distinctly saying, as Detroit goes, so goes the rest of the nation. And this was five or 6 months before the whole financial collapse,
right?
And before GM and Chrysler had to go get the bailout from the government.
Uh-huh.
And it's I don't think it's going to be like that this time.
Right.
But it's too early to tell, man.
Right.
So those money stories are going to start happening faster and harder fairly soon. And that's a scary proposition for a lot of people.
Yeah, because you know, like from your side of the table, that absolutely regardless of whatever money story, economic upturn, downturn, this is something that is going to turn or take their business to the next level. And then despite that, you know, they're still making a counterintuitive decision because probably a bad money story that's running, that's helping them, forcing them to play small. I mean, let's bring it back to you for a second. I mean, how many times do you think that money story that you grew up with, you know, that made it difficult for you to charge, do you think without that money story, your career or your life or your financial circumstance would be even better or different than what it is now?
It's consistent, right? And it's pervasive throughout. And I'll give you one of my wife's favorite stories. She was with me while I was shopping for slacks one day. Uh-huh. And I'm back and forth, and we're at this place, and it's, you know, almost like a suit warehouse.
Okay.
For wholesalers, right? Mm-hmm. So guys for retailers, it's a wholesale shop for retailers. So pricing's great on everything because people come in and buy it and do their markup, and I got a membership because evidently I'm cool.
Yeah. Members
and
only.
So right, they right with a little label right here. And so I get down to these two pair of pants, and I'm hemming and hawing about which ones to get. My wife's like, just buy them both, and I'm like, I don't know. And the sales guy looks at me and goes, man, you're not buying a house, Terry. And it was like, I deliberate so much, and it's right. Partly because of that kind of story.
Yeah.
You know, to flip it back though to the business side, and this is the messed up part of business and how their money story affects them. When recessions happen or when things dry up a little bit, businesses intuitively cut two things. First and foremost, and I think you could probably guess what they are. What are they?
One of them is marketing.
One of them is marketing.
Which is like the stupidest thing I will tell every business person that is willing to listen. Like, it should be the last thing you cut. I'd almost, because we have a restaurant business and a family restaurant business, and my sister, they run it, my sister and her brother-in-law. And I still remember a conversation we had at a restaurant that was on its way out. And then she was saying, what's the problem? She's like, yeah, there's not a lot of people showing up, you know, so we made some cuts. I said, okay, I'm almost afraid to ask, what did you cut? So mm-hmm. We cut some hours. I was like, okay, that makes sense. Okay. And we cut our marketing budget. I'm like, what? How do you plan on getting butts in the seats then? If your marketing is gone, you know, it's like, because we're not getting enough business, we're going to cut marketing that is supposed to be designed to give us more business so that we can save money and stay where we are.
It's like so dumb to me, right?
It's mind-blowing, though. It's so, that in itself is counterintuitive. Why did you have marketing? Well, we don't know. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's because people don't understand and don't know how to look at the numbers and stuff like that, or I don't know what it is, but I believe it's probably just a what we call the Einstein effect of a bad money story.
It's absolutely, and it's pervasive. And the one thing is, it's as counterintuitive as it is, mm-hmm. it's also every bit that consistent, yeah. Right? It's across the board what people do. And maybe it goes back to the old line that 50% of my marketing doesn't work. The problem is I don't know which 50%.
Right.
You know, yeah, it's that's so
throw out the baby with the water.
if you can't figure out that the marketing, it actually turns into a profit center when you do it right, and there is no profit without it, you're doing it wrong. Good friend of mine won CIO Magazine CIO of the Year 2 out of 3 years in the early 2000s, and he did that by turning IT into a profit center, because everybody looks at IT, accounting, human resources, and marketing as cost centers, right? Right? If you can realize how those are actually where profits come from, mm-hmm. you change your opinion of it.
And you change the dynamic of your business too.
180 degrees in an instant.
Yeah.
So yeah, work toward doing that.
Yeah.
Just to put the nail on the head, the second area, not marketing, training, speaking of human resources. Right? And then people will cut training, or companies will cut training before they cut marketing. And it's just so
It's stupid dumb. Because people are always growing. People are, you know, I'm one of my other companies, I told you I have like 5 other companies, right? One of my other companies is called Human Op Technologies, which is short for Human Optimization Technologies.
And it's
We have a patented yacht. Exactly. You caught it. Oh, my God. So on the ticker tape, we really want to go public with this just so that people can buy the hot ticket.
I love it. I love it.
What's a good hot? It's hot.
It's hot. It's a hot.
It's a hot stock. Hot.
Fantastic.
But yeah, it's a patented human assessment technology where we go in and we literally optimize the talent for optimal output. And,
cool.
You know, and you're right. I mean, I think those two are one of the two stupidest things. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, it's like the statistics show that, you know, when you onboard someone brand new into a salaried position, 60% of the first annual salary is all training.
Yeah.
Why would you cut that after you invested so much in it to begin with? Just because something's going on with the economy.
It's so chicken, right? And I think ultimately that might be part of it. You know, maybe at the core of who we are, there's just a little yellow streak running up the majority of our spines. It could be. I don't know.
I know. We call it money, bad money stories. And so, you know, and here's the thing. Everybody grows up in this country anyway with a little bit of a bad money story, a little bit of money anxiety going on. Why? First and foremost, we're in a capitalistic world. Right. Mm-hmm. And then two, the way the educational system is, where how we teach and raise our children in within that, in terms of all the different things. And the day, you know, bless his heart, the Dave Ramseys of the world that coach the people in the middle class to stay middle class, but successfully middle class, is all about, you know, budgeting and cutting down. And just triggering those anxieties to get you to take action on something that you should be able to take action regardless of the trigger, right?
Absolutely. Like, if you need coaching for that, you're not doing something right. Like, logic dictates, you know.
Right.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. So with that being said, someone's obviously going to ask, is, well, what should they cut then? If they are going to have to cut, you know, do budget cuts and whatnot, instead of cutting at marketing, instead of cutting at training, where should they cut?
Well, there's a lot of expenses that people take on a regular basis, mm-hmm. that they probably don't need.
Right.
There's a lot of opportunity to do some outsourcing that people don't ever look at,
right.
that would save them time and money. You know, administrative happens. I look at the amount of layers in most businesses, uh-huh. right? You know, business for whatever reason was structured on a military basis,
yeah.
right? If you look at the hierarchy of business, it
right.
matches our military very, very well. And there are a lot of companies, especially in the banking and the finance space,
right.
that have 18 different layers of vice presidents or some sort of VP. And I don't fully understand why that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably isn't. So administratively, I think most companies are heavy. I think there's probably ways to manufacture a little bit more efficiently and more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole movement in the early 80s, the whole just-in-time inventory thing,
right.
was a great way to start cutting some costs.
Right.
But I still think organizations could improve processes. You know, we talked about GM earlier. You know, GM had two, and I don't know that it's still as efficient as it could be. But if you look in the old days when there was Oldsmobile and Pontiac and Saturn, mm-hmm. and then there was Buick and Chevrolet and
right.
GMC was still around and Saab,
mm-hmm.
if you look, six of those seven brands, and I don't know if I said Cadillac, six of those seven brands all had basically the same type of vehicle,
mm-hmm.
right? You could get a sedan, you could get a couple of different trim levels, you could
right.
get a different set of speakers in it. But it's like, do we really need that much choice of the exact same thing? go to any grocery store and go look at the toothpaste aisle, or if you're a guy, go look at the tampon aisle.
Right.
It's like, what is this? How is this necessary? Deodorant, there's 87 different types. We really, truly don't need as many choices. But Zest, do not take my soap away again. I like my Ocean Spray soap,
Zest,
so leave
yeah.
that.
It smelled so good.
Well,
wasn't Zest the one that floats, or was that there was like a whole gimmick that they're saying the floating soap?
Ivory, yeah, 99.44, baby, 99.44. That's so funny. I got a good friend of mine whose last name is Ivory, and
yeah.
for whatever reason, I just every once in a while I call him 99.44.
Yeah,
not amused. He's not amused with that at all.
He doesn't float. He sinks.
He was a champion water skier, so he probably
so he's floating at some level.
Maybe he skips. I don't know.
Oh my god! This is what happens when you get a couple of marketing geeks on the call. You start saying, "This is what we were geeking out on while we were growing up on the different types of way the marketing."
Yeah, you pay attention, it sticks, right?
Yeah, it totally does. So we talked a little bit about, you know, how money stories can impact your business and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of people say, "Okay, great. Well, I don't have a business, or my business or my career is okay. So if that seems to be okay and I'm happy." Where else does that impact it? And I think we started talking about, especially your particular money story around, like a family has the divorce and they have, child support checks and everything like that. I don't think they have that in other countries as much as they have it over here. But then if that story was running big and, you know, did it have the potential, let me ask you, for you to reconsider or think twice about getting married or about having kids or that type of stuff?
It really didn't with me because, mm-hmm. and it's possible because both parents got remarried when I was 11 or 12.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So one worked really well and stayed married for, my dad got remarried and stayed married until he passed away. Right. And my mom got remarried to a total jerk who was a total different set of money stories that we could get into on the next episode.
I know.
but that marriage lasted about 5 years, so it didn't fully take. Wasn't just due to money though, it was due to him being a total jerk, so
it was
a different story.
Well, money tends to be a cover-up anyway for the real problem. You know, money's really just a scapegoat more than anything, because money doesn't care. You know, it doesn't. It's like that Geico commercial where that pile of money just sits there and stares at you and has a background music play. And you're just like,
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, really? You got to see it. It's like a pile of money with eyeballs on it. It's Geico.
Totally check it out.
But that's like perfect example. It's like money doesn't care. It's impartial. You know, it's kind of like a gun doesn't do anything when it's just sitting there. It's whoever picks it up and decides to either, do I use it for seismic measuring or do I use it to actually shoot something, you know?
Right. Absolutely right. The intent is on us. It's not on the inanimate object ever.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the things that was really important to me about 10 years ago, when I did the work to realize the self-worth conversation that we had earlier. It was, okay, well, if I can't change me, I have to change my attitude, right? And so it was looking at money as energy, right? And as a form of something that kind of flows, right? So for a period of time, it was like, if I had it, I couldn't spend it because that was the only way to keep it, right? It wasn't if I had it, I could spend it to figure out how to make more of it, right?
Right.
Sometimes I joke and talk about how lazy my money is because my money doesn't go out and work and bring me all its money friends, right? And I'm like, that money is so damn lazy. I need money that works harder, you know? But it's Kevin O'Leary always talks about the idea of sending his little money troops off to go recruit some buddies and get more money in, right? It's a great way to look at it.
It absolutely is.
That's what we need to do, man. Yeah. We need to let money recruit more money.
For sure. Now, would you say, though, that there may be people out there who went through what you went through and make that as a reason as to not get married or not to raise a family, or just because, you know, maybe there was a little bit more trauma than you had to deal with? Imagine like two parents who weren't so amicable with each other.
Oh, 100%, right? Because we live life to somewhat, it's programmed organically, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole nature versus nurture argument, I'm not going to explain that to you, obviously. but if you look at where we are nature-wise, it's a certain set of programming. And the nurture side's a whole different set. And I'm not going to be able to tell you which is more powerful and which is more prominent, because I don't think anybody can tell you at that point.
Right.
But we are definitely creatures of what we observe.
Yeah.
Right. And so there are people that I no doubt had broken relationships in their family and brought that level of themselves to every interaction since. I joke all the time about the amount of baggage the average person carries, right?
Yeah.
You know, some people are in the room before they even walk in. Like, their baggage shows up and takes over the entire space. They're like, oh,
the Japanese
God, get out
call
of my
that
space.
That energy miasma. It's this like dark, pervasive energy that creeps in like hours before the person arrives.
Yeah, we all know those folks, right?
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, listen, so we talk about awareness and acknowledgement. You know you have this baggage. You know you're that person that's bringing this gunk with you.
Yeah.
Do us all a favor. Set that gunk down,
right?
Leave it in a compartmentalized inside of your brain.
Yeah.
Go visit it whenever you need to, right? You don't have to throw it out. I'm not telling you to empty the closet here, but I'm telling you just separate. Yeah, you totally should, right? But that's step three, right? Step one is just move it out of your everyday life. Because a lot of people hang on to it like Linus holds onto a security blanket.
Right. Or Pigpen with his dust cloud.
Yes. That's actually probably even more apt analogy.
Right? But, hey, because Pigpen's not even aware he's doing it.
He's got no clue.
Yeah, at least Linus knows he's holding onto the blanket, but Pigpen doesn't even know he's dirty. He doesn't realize, like...
I don't know how you just one-up me on a peanuts analogy, but that I bow to you, sir. Well done.
Well, I mean, because what we were talking about before was like, you know, we started talking about, I think we ended up talking about the population decline in Japan and how last year I went back there to speak with a bunch of entrepreneurs about how important it is to get your money stories out of the way and really kind of step into the space of entrepreneurship because, you know, I dropped the bomb right at the end because when you do that, you will save your race. And it's because we talked about every year, there's 1.8%, that was last year's statistic, 1.8% negative population growth with every passing year in Japan. And I think the reason why the number keeps going up is because the population decreases and the same rate is of decreases there, which then increases the percentage. Right,
absolutely. And it certainly continues to get older. But as we were talking about, the cost of living there is so out of whack, especially in Tokyo, in the largest city there, that to your point, people have a hard time figuring how they can even afford to live. And, you know, it reminds me of the very beginning of the movie Idiocracy, which turns out was a documentary. I didn't know that at the time. Right? It turns out, total documentary. But they said that smarter people kept looking at the world and saying, now isn't the right time, now isn't the right time, now isn't the right time to have children.
Right.
And dumb people keep doing it like rabbits, and all of a sudden there's 17 of those, right? So the number gets skewed. it's kind of...
By the way, if anybody hasn't seen that movie, Idiocracy, it is a fantastic... You know, on the surface, it looks really dumb, but if you actually take the time to take in the message behind it all, it is actually quite brilliant.
Yeah, it is. It is. I had
like Luke
turn
Wilson,
it off.
Right? Wasn't it? No.
Yeah, exactly. It was Luke Wilson, and it was the guys that do South Park that put it together, right? So Matt and
those guys are brilliant. I'll tell you that right now.
Unbelievably so. No greater sense of commentary on our society than what comes out of those two guys every week.
They just don't. The problem is they just don't have a filter.
Yeah.
Kyle's mom is a bitch. Wait a minute.
They're not always right. Yeah. Don't try it at home.
I know. And,
but yeah, definitely a great show.
But I mean, just to put it in perspective, you know, a lot of people hear 1.8%. Ah, it's not a big deal. We don't, like you were saying, you know, oh, a lot of people don't think about it. We don't have to take care of it now. We don't have to really. I mean, they are kind of, the government is, you know, but the new generation of the Japanese children and the younger generation, they're not grasping it because if you think about 1.8% out of like 100 people, it's like, okay, that's two people. Big deal. Whoop-de-doo. But what we're talking about here is when we looked it up, what was it, about 130 million
Yeah, 130 million population. Yeah.
So if you round out 1.8 to 2%, which is probably closer to what it is this year, if they don't make it, if they didn't make a change, 2%. That's
Basically 260,000 people a year, right?
No, it's 130 not, it's times 2%. That's 2.6 million.
Is it? Yeah, maybe it is. I was just telling my wife I've gotten really bad at math.
Well, okay, let's take 100 and take 2%. Okay, let's round down. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. And let's say 100, 2% of 100 is 2.
Yeah.
So if you add 6 zeros, that's 2 million.
Oh, it would be 2 million, yeah.
2.6 million people are decline per year.
Per year?
Per year. A reduction of the population by 2.6 million.
So if you drop that, that means 65 years from now, right? 65 times 2 is 130 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like zero people.
Zero people. That's I mean, 2.6 million, that's worth, that's like, that's genocide.
That's completely. I you know, and so hopefully they figure it out, see what, and start changing, right? Because you can't sustain a society in with that kind of negative growth rate, by definition of negative growth rate.
Right. And all the beauty behind the culture and the homogenous nature and the stuff that was created, the homogenous society that they have over there, would be gone.
That's too much history and too much beauty and really some great people there, dude.
I know, because you have family that are from that culture, you know. So,
I do. That is accurate. Yeah. Yeah, my nephews are both half Japanese, and they go back and hit the country every year.
Wow.
So,
it's maybe you should let them know so they'll do something about it, because they're younger and they have more energy.
That's right. Maybe they should move back. I'm going to have them Snapchat all their friends or whatever.
Right. There you go.
Start doing it.
Exactly. So let's talk. Okay, let's take it all away from this money piece. Let's talk about you, because the thing that you do on a day-to-day basis is so much on the cutting edge and helping on so many levels, especially, I mean, just kind of your approach and your marketing strategies, that if, let's say, Japan applied that to their problem, what they're needing, they could actually get that message out there in a stronger, more powerful way. So you create branded content. You create what your influencer networks. Let's first define what that is. What is branded content and what is influencer networks? I mean, what is that all about?
So branded content is content that's actually cool, stuff that people want to see, right? So maybe it's a concert. Maybe it's a video about something going on in the area.
Right.
Maybe it's just kind of a walkthrough of something going on in your local community in your downtown. Mm-hmm. And then branded content means that you just slap your brand on at the end of it. Mm-hmm. You know, video is huge, right? Mm-hmm. We're 2018. Video is not going anywhere but up, up, up.
Right.
The challenge is most businesses think, oh, we have to make a video. So let's have you come in and you can film our executives and we'll talk about our unique value proposition or sales proposition. Right. Then I'll take you out to the manufacturing floor and I'll show you how we manufacture the stuff. And then we'll take you over to the accountants and they can show you how they account for things. And hey, look, you've had a unique view inside of our business. Oh my God, no, I stopped paying attention 4 seconds into it. Skip ad. But if it's cool, right, people not only watch it, they engage with it, they share it, and they tell other people about it.
And what makes it cool?
That's the goal, right? That's the tough part. It has to be something that's going to relate to your intended audience.
Right.
I always joke, right? If it doesn't dot people between the eyes,
then you're not
it
Indian.
Doesn't really matter. Right? It doesn't exist.
If it dots you, doesn't between your eyes, then you're not Indian, for one thing.
Right. You couldn't possibly be. Right? So I'm actually...
That was actually not borderline racist, but anyway.
So, listen, they almost got rid of Apu on The Simpsons, and it wasn't nearly as racist as what you just said. So,
Simpsons, but they're... They've got the money to back themselves up. Someone decides to take full suit on me right now, I'll be like, okay, sorry.
Sorry, I have to. We have to edit this whole section now. It's so fine. We're too sensitive. Good God, we're too sensitive.
We are.
So that's the branded content side. The influencer network side, and we've been looking at this word that I've not heard until in the last couple of weeks, but micro influencers mm-hmm. are people that actually have some swagger. They have some followers that engage with them, that pay attention right. to what they do, right? And so I don't, you know, people are always like, well, what's the number? How many do you have to have? You know, I don't think the quality, the quantity matters as much as the quality. Does so you could be, if you post something and you get 100 likes and you have 10,000 followers, that's probably not as effective as posting something, getting 100 likes and having 200 followers, right? So it really, there's probably math in here that I obviously don't know how to do, so I'm not going to get into, but there's something that's going to be important there. So it's the idea of taking folks that have this audience that is engaged, having them share the content or co-create content or co-produce content.
I love that,
and then putting it out in front of their network. You know, to some extent, it's what you do with this show. It's what I do with our show. Right. You find people that have an audience. You have them come on. They feel great about being on the show. They tell all their friends and hope that their friends watch it and share it so their friends see it.
Well, it's a pay-forward
economy.
So it's
better taking out that level.
Yeah, it's a pay-forward economy, because my goal and job really here is to identify those inspirational nuggets that you have already built into you, spent a lifetime cultivating. I mean, it's already has happened, the show, but I mean, and by you just sharing your story, hint, hint, story, and everything else that comes and your revelations, I mean, I can already imagine like hundreds of people, if they just sat here and just listened to what you went through and what you talked about, would be inspired on some level because of you telling your story and you sharing your knowledge and your wisdom and everything. You know,
and so true.
And you're right. I mean, and that's what it comes down to. That's why I'm such a big fan of what it is that you do. Now, the biggest problem is when people, and this is why people cut, you know, budgets for this type of marketing, is because they don't necessarily, they can't connect the dots of how this then translates to the bottom line. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, you can share that, you know, because I think that's a big question that most decision makers, CEOs, CMOs and everything like that, who may not necessarily spend all their time geeking out like we do over statistics and following the money, so to speak. How do you then explain it to them? It's like, well, that's all nice and it's cool, but how does cool translate to dollar signs for the business?
So I'm fortunate, right? I don't remember if we were talking about him before show or on show, but my partner Mike is brilliant, right? He's a growth hacker. He's a technology guy that does marketing, right? Which is where you basically have to be. And what he's figured out how to do is create some level of artificial intelligence that does attribution. So we can go in and we can actually track posts, and I won't get into how, but we can track the physical post. We can see where it's gone. We can follow the user pathway from not just where they are, where they clicked send on your form on your website, but what they've seen every step of the way. And what you often find out is they saw a blog post that you wrote 18 months ago or watched a video that you did 2.5 years ago, decided to follow you then, saw a handful of things, and when the time came where they actually needed your product or service, then they filled out the form.
Right.
And we can track that entire pathway.
Right.
Most people are like, oh, yeah, well, they click this, so this must be the reason that they called now.
No.
It usually isn't. We know that branding takes multiple imprints,
right,
and that's only grown since the advent of social and digital.
Right. And now, unlike before, the minute they come in touch with you one time through your branded content, through your cool content, now it's like, you know, it's like a burger you can't flick off your finger. Now we get to follow them wherever they go because there's a footprint and there's a trail. Now we're starting to follow them, and then we can really kind of understand your market on a much deeper level, which if you are smart enough and you're in a CMO and CEO position and you understand marketing, at least on a fundamental one-on-one level, the more you understand your market, the easier it is for you to kind of structure your language and your marketing strategies to serve that audience in the best way possible.
Right. And stop being all things to all people, because you're not.
Because you're not.
Because
you can
not.
Try, but it's going to be exhausting for you anyway, even if you do somehow make it that way.
Yeah, you know, it's so silly to me.
You see those, you know, the companies like Coke and Nike and everything in the beginning, back in the 80s and 90s, that it was all, it's about being everything to everyone, you know, make it like a one thing. And then now, because of technology, they realize we can scale back and focus on singular campaigns and messages and just focus all of our time and energy on that one campaign at a time.
Exactly. And we can reach the ideal audience, speak to them, right, and then we can create a slightly different message with a slightly different background and reach a different ideal audience and speak directly to them.
Yeah.
Because all the channels exist now.
Right.
It used to be three channels. It was ABC, NBC, and CBS.
Right.
That stopped like years ago, people. Right. We can micro-target.
Yeah, micro-target. And because of the speed of technology and the speed that money and technology provides, we can do a single-threaded approach and not worry about having to spend a year, 2 years, 3 years before we see any results. Single-thread approach, 1 month, 3 month campaign, boom, we've got ROI, add another thread.
That's exactly right. We were talking about before, we do road mapping with our clients to figure out how we can make them some money fast so we can get budget that grows and continue to make them more money,
right?
We don't want to take all of your money anymore. We don't want to, that's dumb. Right. And if marketing companies are telling you that's the way to do it, then they're dumb now too.
Right? They're going to be like the dinosaurs, kind of like, and they're going to go extinct, right?
Exactly.
So,
it's gone.
You know, and at the end of it all, if you have a bad money story running and it's driving your decision-making process, even if you've got someone as brilliant as Terry laying out the entire blueprint in front of you, at the 11th hour, if you allow that money anxiety to roll and rear its head up, you're going to say no to something that is probably going to help you turn your business around if you're struggling in your business or take your business to the next level.
That's right.
So super cool.
Pay more attention.
Yeah, I know. Believe it or not, it's an hour already. Holy cow.
I know. I just looked at him. I was like, ooh, he's going to wrap up on me.
I know.
Stop talking.
We kind of have to, because otherwise, you know, I can't save enough the rest of the content for the next episode that you come on. I would love to actually have you come back.
I believe
there's so many different topics around this that we can talk about, and you are so well-rounded in terms of your awareness of, I mean, you've obviously explored a lot of, done a lot of introspective work to understand not just the market that you're in, but yourself in terms of how you can best serve. And I love that. I mean, this is the, and you're exactly the type of people that we'd like to have on the show to be able to kind of share your knowledge, share your wisdom, also share a little humanity in it all. Right? Like you were saying, it's all about the humanity, you're humanitarian versus, what did you say it was?
I choose humanity over nationalism every day of the
week, man.
I'm a human first.
Yeah, right? Human first.
Definitely an American, right?
Yep.
But
yep. Exactly.
A human.
So, but thank you so much. I mean, I really appreciate it. And it's such a pleasant surprise having you on. I had no idea what to expect, to be honest, because it was so last minute. I'm so glad that Trish, you know, our mutual friend Trish, made it happen. So this is probably the beginning of a lifetime friendship that will probably continue on. Make sure you stick around after we debrief a little bit, because there's some cool things to talk about. But Terry, thank you so much for being on the
show. Thank you, Wayne. Yeah. Appreciate it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's our show for this week. Again, if you found this episode to be valuable and know of someone else who could benefit from this, and if you can't think of somebody right now, what are you doing? You're not thinking hard enough, because, oh my God, this show was off the chain today. And from what we talked today about today, make sure you share it. Make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a thumbs up on YouTube Live if you're watching us there. Okay? Very cool. So that's a wrap. Have an amazing week applying the knowledge from today. And if you have any questions about how to do that, make sure you comment below, reach out to us. And I'll be posting all of Terry's information in the comments, so you can kind of reach out and connect with him at oneknee.com. And we'll be back next week on the Money Lab Live podcast, where we are joined by the founder of Be the Change HR, Leilani Kiroy. This is Wei from the Money Lab and Terry Bean from One Knee signing off.